Violet Brown driving.
Now, it's time to talk Celtics.
Celtics come roaring out of the gate.
This is the Sports Hub Celtics Show with Gasper and Murray. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Game on lock for sure.
Jaylen Brown will guard the inbound of OG Anunoby, who's in the spot Kyle Lowry would be in when he won the game. They throw to the far corner again. Siakam catches. They got to go quick. Siakam launches the three. It's in the air. No good. Rebound. Headed out of bounds. Anunoby saves it. Back into Ibaka. He misses at the buzzer, and it's over. And the Boston Celtics going to the final seconds of the final game of the seven-game series we all hoped it would be, and not only survived the Toronto Raptors, they have taken the title belt off them and advanced, taking their talents to virtual South Beach.
We should definitely be hardened. We should definitely have a lot more in our toolbox to go back to, but we also have to get ready for a different, more unique team now in Miami.
Sports Hub Celtics Show, 98.5 of Sports Hub. Jim Murray, Chris Gasper, Brian Rob, Boston Sports Journal. And you want to join us, 617-779-0985. Obviously, a lot to unpack from last night's Celtics 92-87 win over the Raptors. They escape win game 7. The fact that they shoot 13 for 23 from the free throw line. They were hitting bricks all night in regard to three-point shots. I don't think it was that great, especially early for guys like Jaylen Brown, rather. It was a good night for Jason Tatum, a really great night for Marcus Smart. Why they win that game. But you just look at the stat sheet, and it's like, ooh, if you didn't watch this thing last night, it's like, how the hell did you end up winning this game? But it was grit. It was the plays like Marcus Smart and the block at the end of the game, the defense overall, Tatum, who I thought was excellent. You make a good point, because I was down on Brown, but you know, when he did try to convert in his game and start shooting twos rather than threes, he ended up having a pretty decent night. He switched up his game, and he and Tatum combined for 50 points. Celtics get out of it. And I like what Brad Stevens said there in that clip after the game, Chris, and that it's like, well, we should be hardened now. So can you make a case that they are better off that it went this far, even though it shouldn't have? You know, they had that screwy last-second loss in Game 3. They had the no-show a week ago tonight in Game 4. Win Game 5, the double overtime loss Game 6, which they let get away from them. But that it went this far, that it played out this way, can you make a case that they are hardened? They're better off that this thing went this far, and now they should probably come out of the East as well, because I do think that they are more talented than the Heat.
Yeah, I think you can make that case. And I think it was Jason Tatum who said this, I'm not sure, but somebody with the Celtics mentioned that it's not the playoffs unless you overcome adversity. They had to overcome adversity in this series, and I think this series ultimately ended up working out better for them in a lot of ways than if they had just swept Toronto. I think they're more battle-tested, battle-hardened. I think this was an important victory in terms of their overall maturation process to be the team that, honestly, we expected them to be when LeBron James left the Eastern Conference, and last year they were supposed to take the mantle. And now it looks like they're closer to taking that mantle in the East, not just this year, but moving forward with the young core. I think this was an important Game 7 victory for them, and an important step in the process of learning how to win, which is something that you see throughout NBA history, that great players, star players, have to experience some struggle, have to experience some disappointment to ultimately become who they're going to become and ultimately become champions. And I think that this was really important for the Celtics, not only to beat Toronto, but in a lot of ways beat them at their own game in terms of outlasting them, grit, grind, defense, intensity, hustle, clutch plays, winning a close one down the stretch, squeaking it out. I think it will benefit them so much more than if they had just blown these guys out in Game 7, which at one point in that game, when they had the 12-point lead, it looked like that might happen, Jim, and it looked like the Celtics thought that was what was going to happen.
And that started to bother me. It's like they wanted it too easy. And I started to get concerned about their intestinal fortitude, I guess. It's because... This time last week, when they lose Game 4, and some of the caterwauling and crying, it's like, and concern, it's like, I thought you people believe in this team and the upside and Tatum and Brown and the youth and how well coached they are. And Brad Stevens, like, why are you people freaking out? They had a bad loss in Game 3. They played their asses off for 48 minutes. They were the better team in that game. They had a freak loss. And not that I'm excusing it, but it kind of would be expected a little bit that they have that kind of no-show in Game 4. They show up in Game 5, thought that was their best, maybe their best game in the series. But it was after Game 6 and the double overtime loss and how many leads that they could let pee away in that game that I was like, oh boy, well now I can understand why people are concerned. And their inability to close if they were to lose last night, Chris, I would have put that on par with last year in just how disappointing and unacceptable that would have been, and how they win one game against the Milwaukee Bucks, and then they lose in a gentleman's sweep, and it's a no-show, and it's like, that's embarrassing. And this would have been embarrassing if you lose to a lesser team than the Raptors. And they are. Like, Lowry ended up kind of proving me wrong a little bit. I didn't take him as seriously, but I don't know. They're a lesser team talent-wise. You shouldn't lose to them. And so it would have been a massive failure, a massive disappointment. But the way that it played out, they might be better off for it. They really might, rather than them sweeping them. Or you know.
I think so, particularly given the opponent that they're going to play. I think Toronto is excellent preparation for Miami. Well-coached team, good defensive team. The Celtics have the best defense in terms of points per game in the playoffs. Number two, the Miami Heat right now. Number three, the Toronto Raptors. So I think it's good preparation for what you're going to see. I think Miami's a deeper team than Toronto was. Jimmy Butler's playing a lot better than Pascal Siakam, who I'm sorry, Celtics fans. Like, I'm going to go on a tangent here, but I know you love Marcus Smart, and Tatum was like, Pascal Siakam was your MVP. The fact that he played so poorly throughout that entire series and literally gave possession after possession after possession away was huge. There was no player who took the floor in the series who did more for the Celtics and was more important to them winning the series than Pascal Siakam.
And he's not that bad, right? And I know, like, if you don't pay attention or didn't really watch the Toronto's run last year, he's not as bad as he was in this game. It always makes me wonder.
He was an all-star this year. He averaged 23 a game.
So was he injured? Did he, I don't know, eat too much bad food down in the Orlando
bubble? I mean, I read
a little
Raptor stuff this morning, and you know, he's being supported by his teammates and by Nick Nurse. But there's also an admission there that maybe during the Hoops hiatus due to COVID that he didn't stay in the best shape, or that he didn't really keep his skills up. Because when you look at the numbers, there's a clear, like, from the moment he got in the bubble, he wasn't as good. He wasn't as putrid as he was in this series, but he wasn't anywhere near the guy who made the All-Star team and averaged 23 a game. So I know everybody here got on Jason Tatum for not having a hoop and not doing basketball stuff at first. It seems like Siakam might have really done that, and that might be why he's not the same guy. But I mean, just last night, five turnovers. He had five turnovers. And the key to this game to me was the Celtics and Marcus Smart turning the tide with the turnovers. And the Celtics in this game had 31 points off 18 Raptor turnovers. That's a huge difference in this game and what was a really close game. That's why they won.
Oh, yeah, no, for sure. It was defense. You know, he had very active hands. You know, they had hoopheads, like using that term, like all that kind of stuff. Because look, what, they shot 40% last night. You have Marcus Smart, your best shooter in this series as a whole. He turns into Steph Curry. Like, if you were to tell that to someone that didn't watch any of these games, you're like, well, the Celtics lost, right? No matter who they were playing. But no, they didn't, because it was really good defense.
Great defense.
And I thought last night it was right for Brad Stevens to really put the game into Jason Tatum's hand. They're going to go as he goes. And look, he looked tight early, I thought collectively they looked tight, especially in that first quarter. But Tatum ultimately a really good night, and they should do that. Like, Brad Stevens should put the ball into Jason Tatum's hands, and if he's going to have a night like last night and he hits his ceiling, well, this is why I said going into that Toronto series after game one, I'm like, oh, this team's coming out of the East. They're going to go to the finals. In fact, I think they're going to win the whole thing, and then I get yelled at because I'm cursing them. Jones picks them too, and it's like, oh, you guys are just saying that. I was like, no, I think based on their talent and how they're playing right now, yeah. In fact, they don't have to go to a Toronto, or Milwaukee was still in it, they wouldn't. You know, the even playing field of playing in the bubble, Chris, like, I do. I like them. I like their talent, and when they – those two, Brown and Tatum, are hitting their ceiling, given the coaching. Smart, who looks in phenomenal shape, by the way, throughout this whole thing. They should. Based on the talent alone, they should come out of the East.
I think so, too. I mean, I like this Miami team. I think it'll be a difficult matchup. But when you break it down, who has more high-end, all-star caliber talent? It's the Celtics, especially if Gordon Hayward's back. So that's a big X factor in the series. But I think the Celtics are the team. A lot of times when I try and look at breaking down a matchup in sports, I'll try and look at it and say, who has the greater margin for error? You know, if this team has to play at what percentage of their capability and they can still win? I look at Miami and I'm like, they probably have to play 90-95% of their full capability to win this series. I look at the Celtics and I feel like the Celtics could play 85% of their full capability and win this series.
Now, were there things that concerned me last night? Sure. Oh, for sure. You know, I think the way that Kemba Walker's playing right now in Game 6 and 7, I have some concerns whether or not that knee is bothering him. There was a stretch last night, Chris. If I heard the words semi-Ojeleye for three, again, I was ready to throw my remote through the television.
He knocked down a big three from the corner.
Yeah. How many did he take? Was it five? There was like one too many at one point when the game was really starting to get close. And it's like, oh, Jesus, they're going to blow this thing. And then when you had, some of their depth concerns me, their lack of a big. Now that you go up against a guy like Bam Adebayo for Miami, who might be the player you're going to be worried about the most going into this series. Like, there's some red flags. But look, now is the time for enjoyment, right? And it's far and few between in these COVID times. So let's enjoy last night's Game 7-1. We'll get right to your calls, some thoughts on last night. And going into the Eastern Conference Finals against Miami, how do you feel about that matchup as well? You want to join us, 617-779-0985. Sports Hub Celtics Show here on the Sports Hub.
It's an hour dedicated to your Celtics. Chris Gasper, Jim Murray, the Sports Hub Celtics Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub. It's an hour dedicated to your Celtics. Chris Gasper, Jim Murray, the Sports Hub Celtics Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
How does it feel to feel responsible for this outcome?
I mean, I think, you know, at the end of the day, like, it's part of being in this league and being at the level that I'm supposed to be at. I take a lot of the blame, man. I take a lot of the blame just, you know, continue to work. Like, it's a learning experience for me. Continue to learn, you know, get back to the drawing boards and come back better.
You suck, you jackass.
That's a hell of a question. I don't know who that reporter was that covered the Raptors, but that was a question to Pascal Siakam of the Toronto Raptors, who Chris Gasper called the MVP of the Celtics in this series. How does it feel to be responsible for this outcome?
She gets it.
How does it feel to be the best player of the Celtics, even though you're on the Raptors?
Yeah, she gets it.
I think she's from Toronto.
Oh, okay. Well, good for her. That's
great question.
A hell of a question. And actually, credit to Pascal Siakam for not getting pissed, one. And two, for owning up to it and basically, you know, talking about his deficiencies and knowing deep down he was probably one of the Celtics' best players in this
series.
I mean,
he was like a double agent or like a
really?
Plant. It's like Brad Stevens planted him on the Raptors.
All right, so your thoughts on last night's Game 7, and now as the Celtics go into the Eastern Conference Finals against the Miami Heat, some thoughts and concerns you may have going into that series. I'm dug in. I'm not taking the Heat too seriously. I think Jimmy Butler's overrated. You got a couple of deep shooting Euros that I ain't all that afraid of. They'll go cold. You know, they're going to have the taint of the Bridges on them, too.
Tyler Hero, like, watch out for him.
Oh, he's a rookie. Big moment for him, too. He's going to wilt. The way that Felger and Maz were talking about that team this week pissed me off. Like, oh, the Celtics are going to lose, too. I think Maz has already taken the Heat. They're overrating them. I'm not taking them that seriously. I say Celtics in five. Let's go to Nate in Boston on the Celtics shooting in this series. Go ahead, Nate.
Hey, guys. So I completely agree with Murray. I think the Celtics should win in five or six games. But Murray also mentioned that Marcus Smart has been the best three-point shooter for the team. And just that alone, I think this series against the Heat, it's going to be the biggest kick in the nuts for me as a Celtics fan every time Tyler Herro makes a shot. So I'm not sure if you guys know this, but he actually worked out with the Celtics pre-draft last year, and they loved him. He hit something crazy like 80 out of 100 threes, similar to like Jamal Murray and Buddy Hield, who we all know are, you know, elite scorers in this league. So I'm walking away reading these articles thinking they're going to draft him. But the Sacramento Kings, they finished with the exact same record as the Miami Heat, mm-hmm. and the NBA had to do a coin toss, so the Heat got that pick. But here's my thing. As Danny Ainge, if you have a guy that comes in and lights it up like that, you're telling me that you couldn't, with the 12,000 picks you have, you couldn't move up to the 11th or 12th spot for this guy? This is the exact guy the Celtics need, a guy that can come off the bench, off screen, hit threes, all of that. Instead, we have Grant Williams, who I like, and Romeo Langford, but I'm pretty sure every Celtics fan would trade them in a heartbeat for Tyler Herro. So for me, it's just going to be a kick in the nuts watching this series.
Great call.
Great
Nate.
Call. Yeah, that's phenomenal. I almost like if I could drop this mic right now, I would.
Yeah. But yeah, you were mentioning this very thing earlier that, you know, they worked this kid out, like Nate was just saying. He's hitting all these threes, but Sacramento, told you last year, pat myself on the back.
Yeah, you were right.
Had to be worried about that pick. They get boned by Miami, and now he's there. So that's something, you know, there is a Celtic-centric there thing to be concerned
there
about.
There is And B-Rob might be able to speak to this more. There is a Riley-Ainge rivalry thing.
Oh, yeah. Look at the Winslow. This could have been a Winslow situation. Justice Winslow.
Yeah.
You put 3-4 picks on the table. Miami's like, get the heck out of here. We got our guy.
There's a little something there that goes back to Celtics-Lakers in the 80s. There's a, you know, I'd say there's respect, but
There's a begrudging rivalry. Respect is what it is.
He wrote FU to Ainge in a press release a few years ago. Do you guys remember that?
No. When?
No.
When Ainge was this was Ainge was talking about LeBron. I'll have to look this up. I think it was on TNR. And the Heat released something saying like Ainge should shut up or like in like FM essentially.
Huh.
I'll look it up, but that did happen.
Yes, please do look it up. Yeah, I think this could be an interesting series. There could be some actual bad blood. First of all, I think it's going to take 0.5 seconds for Jimmy Butler and Marcus Smart to get into it.
Andrew and Alston on last night's game. Go ahead.
Hey, how are you guys? Great show as always. I had issues with Brad Stevens in quarters 1 through 3, especially. I don't get why we're going 9 deep in a game 7. I get the starters can't play all game, but there's no reason to go 9 deep, even with foul trouble. And then the other thing, it might be nitpicking, but Brad Stevens is terrified to use his challenge for some reason. He takes his timeouts home. The one when Kyle Lowry gets the charge, it could have been a block, 6th foul, and it's right over 2 minutes. And Stevens just doesn't take a challenge and just takes that timeout and loses it after 2 minutes. I don't get it. But other than that, go Celtics. Celtics in 6.
Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you.
I've heard this, not just from last night's game, too, this thing with Stevens not using these challenges, not using the timeouts. Has that been a concern to you?
That might be a better one for B-Rob. I feel like when he challenges, he normally wins. He might be a little more judicious than some other coaches with it. I also feel like there's a strategy element depending on where you're at in the game to these challenges. So if you have a team like the Raptors, that's an older team that played in the championship last year, that is,
don't give them a break.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Don't give them because these challenges are not fast.
No, I know.
They
if anything,
take a while.
I'm glad that he doesn't just because like, can we go? Come on. Like, let's go. Let's
like,
keep
like
it moving.
When Nick Nurse did the challenge on Kyle Lowry's 6th foul, I thought that was as much to be able to sort of bring his guys over, and give him a blow. Maybe talk about what you want to do as much. I mean, he knew that wasn't going to be overturned. He was just taking a shot in the dark, but he felt like, okay, this isn't going to work, but it's basically a free stoppage, you know?
Chris in New Hampshire on last night's Game 7. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. How's it going? So if you're a Toronto fan, right, just put in the perspective of a Toronto fan, I'm sure that they looked at Game 7 against Boston, and they're like, oh, no, not again. Please, let's not choke this again. But it was a great win by the Celtics last night. And I will say for Toronto, one of the biggest mistakes I think that they made front office standpoint was giving Siakam that max contract and not convincing Kawhi to bring in Paul George and stay with the Raptors. Somewhere Drake is crying in his room and hasn't left his bed this morning listening to Marvin's Room. Thanks for the show, guys.
Thanks, Chris. I'm sure he's found another team.
Oh, B-Rob, you are the man.
All right, so yeah, B-Rob was just talking about, and thanks for the call. So Brian Robb, Boston Sports Journal, was just talking about this thing that Pat Riley said to Danny Ainge. This goes back to March of 2013. Reading here from ESPN, Miami Heat President Pat Riley Friday forcefully responded to criticism leveled against LeBron James by Celtics President of Basketball Ops Danny Ainge. Quote, Danny Ainge needs to shut the F up and manage his own team, Riley said in a statement released through a Heat spokesman. He was the biggest whiner going when he was playing, and I know that because I coached against him.
This is tremendous.
Ainge said he was at a loss to explain why Riley should have gotten into such a lather in the first place. I stand by what I said. That's all. I don't care about Pat Riley. He can say whatever he wants. Ainge couldn't let it go without one final shot at Riley. So there you go.
Oh, let me give you the one final shot.
Then. Oh, there it is. Okay.
Yeah. I don't want to mess up his Armani suits and all that hair goop. It would be way too expensive for me, Ainge said.
Oh, that's great. So you're going to go back about 7 years, but yeah, some bad blood there. So,
oh, this is awesome. I love this. B-Rob, you're the best. I honestly don't
I didn't remember this at all.
This is fantastic.
Oh, well, that's good. Well, yeah, so no, there's, and like you said, if nothing else, Butler and Marcus Smart, like, you know that's not going to take
0.5 seconds before they're entangled and barking at each other.
One open line you want to join us. We'll get more of your calls and thoughts on last night's game. Celtics move on. They win Game 7, beat the Toronto Raptors. Now it is the Miami Heat they will take on in the Eastern Conference Finals on Tuesday. Also, a little nugget. I saw you retweet this, Chris, from Bob Rathbun, who does the play-by-play broadcaster, saying this is going to be the first time that neither the number one or number two seed in the East will make the conference final since the NBA went to the 16-team playoff format in 1984. The last time something like this happened in the East was 1969. When it was the Celtics taking on the Knicks, they were the 4 and 3 seeds, respectively. So, you know, granted, the bubble has a lot to do with this and the fact that there's really no home court advantage, but that's a kind of cool little thing here.
It is a little cool.
You're not getting Chuck. You know,
yeah.
It's so rare that that happens in the NBA.
It's true.
All right, your thoughts on last night's game, the upcoming Eastern Conference Finals. We'll get to your calls next here on the Sports Hub Celtics Show.
This is the Sports Hub Celtics Show. This is Jaylen Brown, the home of the Boston Celtics basketball, 98.5, the Sports Hub. Chris Gasper, Jim Murray, the Sports Hub Celtic Show, on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I mean, I've been in the playoffs two times before this. So, you know, from that and then the last time I was in the playoffs, 5 years ago. So, you know, to be here in my first year and accomplish this and then I wait to the East Conference Finals, you know, to play against a really Miami, really good Miami Heat team. And you know, we have a chance to advance past that. So, you know, it's just big time. You know, it's a special feeling for me.
You got to think that Kemba Walker's enjoying the ride. Times he was skunked down in Charlotte. Doesn't go this far. First time he's ever been this far in the playoffs in his life. It's got to be exciting, but I have some concerns there, Chris. It's the Sports Hub Celtic Show, 98.5 Sports Hub. Jim Murray, Chris Gasper, Brian Robb, Boston Sports Journal, and you at 617-779-0985. The way that Walker has played these last couple of games, maybe it's good defense. It's the box in one. I just, with all the talk about his gimpy knee heading into the bubble, after the four-month layoff, that became a thing. Then he was fine, so it looked. I just wonder if he tweaked something or there's something nagging him a little bit because there's a reluctance, I think, to drive to the hoop. And I don't think that that's Nick Nurse and the stupid box and one in the Raptors defense, too. These last couple of games, the way he's looked, I can't help but wonder if something's up, and that's a red flag for me going into Miami series that, you know, they are going to try to body you. Like, I do think, you know, we were just talking about this thing from 7 years ago, Pat Riley, Danny Ainge, shut
this
up.
This is tremendous.
I wonder if, you know, part of the mentality here is, you know, Riley going to encourage Spoelstra to play 90s-style Heat Knicks basketball, yeah, and rough them up a little bit. And that would be a detriment to someone like Kemba Walker.
It would. And also, I think the question there is, do the Celtics lose their cool?
Right.
Do guys like Marcus Smart and Jaylen Brown, who were really intense, do they lose focus if it becomes a physical series with a lot of trash talking and some borderline stuff by the Heat? I could see that. I mean, that's an old school tactic by Pat Riley. It's right out of the Pat Riley playbook. We're not as talented as you, so we're going to try and muck it up, and we're going to try and be cheap, and we're going to try and get you off your game. You know, there are few people in the history of the NBA who have done as much to damage the game as Pat Riley did in the night. He almost took the league under. I mean, the level of basketball was so bad those years that Jordan was out and those Knicks teams were good and Riley was just mucking it up and it was, you know, sort of the physical style with the Knicks and all that stuff. It was horrible. It was so bad. Like, he took what
you're not gonna tell
the
me.
Pistons
Finals
were doing
of-
to a whole... Yeah. Another level that
Finals
was just unwatchable.
80-79,
oh,
and it's
God,
just it's like
so bad.
The back alley brawl. Oh. It sucked to watch.
The hip checking and just, oh my God, the hand checking and the whole thing.
Bring in B-Rob here. What is it going on with Kemba Walker? Was it the box in one and just really good defense by Toronto, or you think something's acting up with his knee?
I think it's fair to think it's both.
Yeah.
You know, hitting 50 minutes in that game six, and just playing on every other day schedule. Like the Philly series, that was not a grind for him. That was four games. A couple of those games were blowouts. And now you're starting to see the toll come up a little bit. I will say this, though. The Miami's backcourt defensively isn't close to Toronto's. Like, Van Fleet and Lowry are a lot better than, like, Dragic and Duncan Robinson or
That's
Tyler Herro. So that,
really
is, that is going to help out Kemba here. But at the same time, Spoelstra is just as creative with his zone and like junk defenses as Nick Nurse is. So be on the lookout for a lot more of that in this series.
I think the key to this series will be defending the 3-point line. You know, the Celtics have been the best defensive 3-point team in the playoffs. They're holding opponents to 30.5%. I think they've done a really good job. Now it helps. They played Siakam. You know, he shot 4 of 32, missed a lot of wide open looks, but they've been really good. And then on the other side, you look at it and Miami has done really well hitting. They're shooting 38% from three in the playoffs, and they have guys who can space the floor and hit the three. I think that's where it comes down to, because I can't see Miami winning this series without knocking down a bunch of threes.
Eric in Wakefield on Kemba Walker and his performance in this series. Go ahead.
Hey, how's it going, guys? I was actually just going to talk about Kemba and how I think before B-Rob started talking about it and how I think he's going to have a better series and how it's going to be better for him to face Miami with Dragic in the backcourt, not facing Kyle Lowry. But B-Rob, I love you, man. I love following you on Twitter. You're my Celtics go-to guy. I had a question for you. Are we going to see – is this going to be a Robert Williams series or an Enes Kanter series? I'm going to hang up and let you answer.
Thanks, Eric.
That's a great question. It could be neither. It could be a Grant Williams series at center because they're going to have to guard the three, as Chris pointed out. And Bam Adebayo does not take three, so that helps. So that maybe you can sneak in Rob Williams there to match up with him at times during the game. But they're going to be tested from three-point range, and Grant Williams, as we saw at the end of last night, is the best man for that job when Tice is out.
Am I a fool for not taking the Heat as seriously as others are?
I do think that they're at an all-time high. They're on a heater right now, Jim, to your point. Like Crowder shot like 40% from three against the Bucks. Olynyk obviously came up huge in a few of those games. And the Bucks, they weren't right in Orlando at all. They were not the 70-win monster that we saw earlier in the year. So I think arguably Toronto could have been the second-best team in the East in Orlando. We're going to find out.
Can I bring up one more thing quickly just on the bad blood front?
Yeah.
And the S-talking front? Hayward coming back to the series, Jay Crowder. Remember Jay Crowder when he got all upset when the fans, when Hayward came here and they were cheering him and they were recruiting and he got all mad and he was...
Well, took to Instagram and was posting
all that
nonsense, yeah.
So I just, you know, just something else to add to the bad blood in the series.
The level of beefs in this series is like, what do we have, like four or five different feuds going on?
Everybody has beef. Everybody, I'm telling you, this, both sides, they want all the smoke. No doubt in this series.
You mentioned quickly there, B-Rub, that something wasn't right with the Milwaukee Bucks, and that was evident. That ultimately ended up looking like a complete no-show, and maybe we should have looked a little harder at when they lost that first game against Orlando in the first round series. Saw our own Dan Lifschitz retweet this about a half hour ago. He retweeted something that's like a Warriors blog, a Golden State Warriors blog, at the Warriors Talk. So Giannis just went on a big unfollowing spree on Instagram and is no longer following the Bucks or any of his teammates. And Dan Lifschitz went through it with a fine-tooth comb and said, yes, he can confirm this is true. Yikes. At Bucks. Ooh. There's something could be brewing there. And boy, would he be a hell of a fit there. You put him with the Golden State Warriors. Because I did lose a little bit for Giannis. I don't know if I think of him as a number one. I know he's MVP and all that. But I don't know. His game is so limited, Chris, that he reminds me of a young Dwight Howard in Orlando. Like, I think we forget about how... But at that time,
I know. But
he was talked about it as a force.
One of the all-time great losers in the history of sports.
Yeah, I got some questions about him now. So, after the way that he bowed out and how quickly that Milwaukee was taken care of down in the bubble, I don't know. But you pair him with Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. Okay, that's a championship team, and they're going to wipe up on everybody. But him being the guy, I don't really think that after this performance that the Bucks had down in the Orlando bubble. Let's go to longest order await here. Dean in Shrewsbury on Marcus Smart. Go ahead.
I don't agree with people that say we should be starting Smart over Hayward when Hayward is back. Hayward scores at all three levels. He facilitates just as good or better than Smart. And he has the NBA record for free throw percentage in the playoffs. So he's really clutch. He'll make just as many winning plays as Smart will.
But, Dean, I think you're assuming that he's coming back at 100%. And that's the thing. He's missed basically two entire series at this point, hasn't played. He's stepping onto a moving train of the most intense basketball the NBA has to offer this time of year. Marcus Smart's playing well and is in a groove, and Hayward might be physically compromised. So when you look at all of those things, I think if it were just in a vacuum and the two guys are 100% and they've all been playing, that's fine. But in terms of him getting back to basketball, playoff basketball, acclimating and figuring out where he's at physically, I think it might actually behoove them to sort of work him in. And then after a game or two, if he looks good and you want to put him back in the starting lineup, that's great. But to just jam him back in the starting lineup after having not played in 4 weeks, I don't think that's the smartest thing.
Ben in New Hampshire on the Celtics. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Great show again today.
Thanks. Appreciate that.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely, guys. So just kind of quick thing again. I don't want to put the cart before the horse and everything with, you know, just, but I will. So, you know, Celtics win championship, blah, blah. I know there was a little talk. I know Phil ever talked about the asterisk, whatever, of this year with it, obviously everything. I kind of thought of it a different way, that it would be more of like a good asterisk. I mean, you brought up the stat about, I guess, the, you know, number ones not being in the Eastern Conference Finals. I think this is like purely basketball related. You put the best teams in. There's no distractions, I guess. I don't know. For me, I love it. Like, it just shows who's got the talent, who's got it. You're not, you know, the crowd's not making a difference as much as I love being at the games. I'm like, I love this. Like, this shows who's really got it, who's playing ball, and who's just going. So for a basketball enthusiast, I love it. And I think the asterisk, I think it's more intense. I think, Murray, you hit on this and said that you think if these guys can get their heads straight on this, you think it speaks volumes to winning better than a regular championship.
Yeah, Ben, without question. And I don't know how much the fans even really matter, because look at Grant Williams and how tight he was last night missing those free throws. Did you really think he was going to hit either of those? I didn't. I was like, oh, these are guaranteed miss. And speaking of how guys are having a hard time maybe keeping their head straight, look what happened with Daniel House of the Houston Rockets. Like, I'm surprised this didn't happen earlier. No, you get no asterisk from me. I said jokingly, going into this thing, that if the Celtics were to win it, asterisk, because they wouldn't have to go to Toronto. They wouldn't have to go to Milwaukee. But watching these games, if you've been paying attention, not even just these series, throughout, if you watch the bubble playoffs at all in the NBA, the intensity's through the roof. The Heat, a 5 seed, have made it to the Eastern Conference Finals. Like, the teams that are trying, the teams that are focused, the teams that have, you know, put their ass on the line and are giving their all, and there's been a couple of no-shows here and there, like last Saturday, Game 4 for the Celtics, that's bound to happen in any series, even if we were living in the before times. But the teams that are committed, no, there's no asterisk. The focus that these guys have, it's no different. The quality of play, I think, has been as good, if not better. It's interesting to watch in an even playing field. No, you get no asterisk from me in this and any of the other sports.
Wow. And we all know how you love a good asterisk.
I'm the king of the asterisk.
You really are the king.
I have the whiteboard, Chris. I am the one that determines the asterisk. You'll get no asterisk from me, even if the Heat end up winning the damn thing as a 5 seed and a not very talented
this
team.
This
is groundbreaking.
I feel like we need an asterisk for the fact you're not giving out an asterisk, because that's like, I mean, you are the king of it. You love it.
But this Daniel House thing, just quickly.
Yes, let's do
that. That this didn't happen earlier. He was evicted from the NBA bubble after being accused of having a guest in his room. A guest. She was apparently a COVID tester.
Yeah.
And I don't know. They made eyes at each other, and the next thing you know, you're in Bubble Pound Town. And we know what the league policy was. No guests. You can't be doing anything. By the way, the Rockets still playing. It's like after they lost to the Lakers that this apparently happened. The NBA does an investigation into the matter. They find out this goes on. Like, you got to go. And what are you doing, dude? Like, that this didn't happen throughout the league, Chris, as it started up. I'm surprised. Like, credit to the players for keeping their heads on straight. So
a lot of these guys are masters of their own domain.
Right. Yeah, a lot, you know, they still have an internet connection, so I'm sure they're taking care of it, whether they're FaceTiming with their lady or whatever it happens to be. But, you know, that you didn't have this throughout the league, that this kind of thing happened, shows you the focus that they had to have while staying down there. And it can't be easy staying in these hotel rooms. You're doing the same thing day after day after day. How much golf can you play? Yeah. How many pools can you go into before you're bored out of your mind? You know, that's why no asterisk for me that this kind of thing had happened, that the Celtics have kept their heads on straight.
Yeah.
No, I would not put that on.
But with this Daniel House situation, first of all, it's great. His wife unfollowed him, and his wife basically called him out and put him on blast on social media, saying, you reap what you sow and all this other stuff. But I have to say, one of the concerns the players had about this, the bubble early on, was that they were worried it was going to be like sort of a high-class prison. And the fact they're booting him out for this, it kind of is a high-class prison.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, they're pretty much like, you had an unauthorized guest.
Yeah. We told you no conjugals.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, you're out. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just interesting. Like, okay. I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying what he did was right, but it's that you're booted from the bubble. I mean, they can't just, I don't know, they can't just have another COVID tester. Like, they'll just say, okay, from now on, all you get is male COVID testers, Daniel House, and you're suspended.
You know what the rules were, though, and it's an inherently selfish move. Like, on the one hand, I'm with you, Chris. Like, I get it. Like, at some point, you're like,
a man has needs.
Yeah. I need to get it in. I'm losing my mind here. But at some point, like, it's only a couple of months. Yeah, just do the FaceTime thing or go to YouPorn, whatever it happens to be. Take care of yourself and just focus.
Well, what happens to the tester? Is she booted now, too, or does she get to keep her job?
That's a good question, Chris.
You know?
I imagine.
Well, first of all, do we know it's, I mean, I'm making an assumption. Do we know it's a she?
That's a good question as well.
Okay.
That's right.
Yeah, we do.
We do?
Oh, okay.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure. I'll double check.
Okay. Yeah, do some research. But either way, I mean, not, it doesn't matter either way, but I'm just, does that person get to keep their job or are they booted as well?
I'm guessing they're booted as well. I mean, anyone that was involved with this thing, like, you know what the rules are. You got to play by them. If you don't, you're out.
That's pretty tough, though. Like a once in a lifetime chance, maybe for this tester, for he or she to spend a night with an NBA athlete. You got to weigh that versus your job. That's tough.
All right, we have one segment to go in your Sports Hub Celtics show, but even though we'll transition and get to some Patriots and NFL-related stuff, because the Pats kick off tomorrow. It doesn't feel like they should be because there was no preseason and we live in the upside down, but that's what's happening, so we'll get to more of that. But we'll continue to take your Celtics calls as well. Gordon Hayward, how much is he going to play and factor in into this upcoming series of the Miami Heat? We'll get to that next here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
It's an hour dedicated to your Celtics. Chris Gasper, Jim Murray, The Sports Hub. Excitement is building for another banner.
Round for three, got it.
The Sports Hub Celtic Show on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
I think he'll be back at some point in that series, but I don't know when.
All right, a sort of vague answer there from Celtics head coach Brad Stevens on Gordon Hayward, who you've seen practicing for these last couple of games. He's moving the way that he probably should be, but hey, he's going to be back. Doesn't sound like he's going to be leaving the bubble at all for the birth of the next child, his first son. So credit to Penelope there for letting him do that. But we do expect to see him at some point in the series. Just don't know when. How much should he be a factor? Should he be in the starting five, Chris, or should he be coming off the bench? I will just start by saying, yes, that's what he should be doing. He should not be crowbarred into the starting five at all, especially early.
Yeah, I agree. I think give him a couple of games to, and he might even be on a minutes limit. You have a nice flow, a nice chemistry. I think obviously you can manipulate lineups after the start of the game. But I also think with Kemba dealing with whatever he's dealing with, whether it's just straight fatigue or that knee's acting up, having Marcus Smart in there alongside him, I think that helps Kemba on the other end. And the chemistry right now is good. I wouldn't mess with it. And just try and integrate Hayward in a way that doesn't mess with the chemistry, but also doesn't put a ton of pressure on him and allows you, if you're Brad Stevens, to gauge what percentage of Gordon Hayward am I getting? You know, what's his health? Is he 75%? Is he 60%? And then you can figure it out from there how best to deploy him.
How much did they miss him in this series, do you think?
I think they missed him. I think there were times where they missed the offense. They missed his ability to create, his ability to get his own shot. I mean, that's, to me, is the biggest separator in the playoffs. The Celtics move the ball really well, and they create shots, and you have to challenge them on the perimeter, and they get the drive and kick thing going. But you saw it a little bit with Toronto, especially with Siakam being as bad as he was. And the most shocking thing to me about Siakam is he just couldn't beat anybody off the dribble, whether it was Daniel Tice or, I mean, whoever it was. I mean, guys, he needed to be able to take off the dribble. He couldn't. And that's a long way of saying the biggest separator for me in the playoffs, how many guys do you have in your team who can create their own shot? And Hayward's another guy who can create his own shot.
Chuck in D.C. on last night's Game 7 win. Go ahead, Chuck.
Hey, guys. Just two quick things. First, what did you guys think of the coaching from Nick Nurse last night?
I'll be honest. I thought it was pretty good for the most part, but I really didn't understand why he went as much with Gasol as he did. I thought he really should have gone with Serge Ibaka, and I know Ibaka had an injury. And I also thought he maybe could have gone to the small lineup earlier, and I thought he should have run a play or two for OG Anunoby just to get him going. Anunoby was such a big part of the Raptors' success in that game, and it seemed like he barely touched the ball in the series. He only took three shots. I thought that was a mistake.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's those are like givens. I mean, I thought it was, I mean, you know, he's a good coach, but I thought he was horrid last night. I mean, you said also that I think the challenge, you thought that was like that he made on the Kyle Lowry foul. You thought that I was just like, you know, a challenge to, you know, to get his team together. Okay. But what the hell happened after that? Grant Williams, like you, Murray, we knew he wouldn't hit those free throws. So he misses both of them. And then Tatum comes in. Nobody had him marked. He rebounds. He gets the foul. They go up by three. And then you only have one timeout. So you can't draw anything up. Van Vliet's running around. He has no form. He shoots up an air ball that was horrendous. And then there's Fade to Shield. I thought the coaching was just so bad in the last 2 minutes. It's just, again, an indictment on how horrid some of the coaching is in professional sports in crunch time. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I would just say this. You know, I'm not going to blame Nick Nurse for Norman Powell not boxing out Tatum on the what I like to call the Jordan fly-in. You know, it's the guy who's behind the free throw shooter who gets a running start and just comes flying in. That's on Powell.
Like, he has, that's the coach, you know, I mean, you can say the coach should remind you, whatever, whatever. But, I mean, you're a professional. You have to be able to box out there. And that was a problem for Toronto throughout the series. So if you want to put it on the coaching that way, that's fine. But that individual play, to me, Jim, I put that on Powell. And then the situation with Van Vliet, I feel like that's more credit Grant Williams than negative coaching. That's a matchup that on paper, if you're the Raptors, you feel good about that. Okay, we got to switch. It's Grant Williams on Van Vliet. Grant Williams stepped up and he played great defense.
We were just talking in the prior segment about why I would put no asterisk on the Celtics if they're one of the championship, or really any of these teams, because of the focus factor. You got to keep your head straight while you're down in that bubble. And now, as we were reminded by B-Rob during the commercial break, that you can now bring your families and guests into the bubble. That's now allowed as they've moved on here deeper into the playoffs. It's just that Daniel House of the Houston Rockets decided, I'm going to just go with this random girl here rather than bringing in my wife. Mike and Woburn with that with more on that story. Go ahead.
So let me get this straight. The random was a tester.
Yes.
Yeah.
So she's in the bubble.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's not like he imported somebody from outside to come in. There was someone that was already inside. So there's no fraternization whatsoever.
You can't bring it. The players can't bring anybody from, quote unquote, the outside, which basically means outside, you know, the NBA circle into their hotel.
Yeah, she works in the bubble, but she doesn't live in the bubble.
Yeah.
Well, Jesus, man, Joseph, that's crazy. And first of all, let me ask you this. If LeBron ordered room service, you know, got the mixed grill and wanted a side of chicken from the lady that brought the thing up, do you think he'd be out of the bubble right now?
No.
Oh, no, probably.
Definitely not.
No. But this has given me a brilliant idea. I think we need a GoFundMe. We'll get it going. We'll get a nice big fat GoFundMe. I will hire however many entrepreneurial women that want to go out down to the bubble.
Entrepreneurial women.
And find Tony Brothers and Scott Foster and work them over real good. And as soon as you're done, get to that hotel window and shoot a freaking road flare out of there. And just alert everybody to your presence. I want those guys out of the bubble in the worst way possible. And giving them the old police academy under the podium treatment is one way to absolutely do it.
That's right. Take care of them with hot testers. You have go down there, and all of a sudden, you have these girls going into the room like, oh, that Q-tip's not supposed to go there. Ah. All right, we wrap up the Sports Hub Celtics show, but it does not mean we will stop taking your Celtics calls as we get a little bit of enjoyment for the first time in months. Celtics move on. Yay. Big win last night. Game 7 Eastern Conference Finals coming up with Miami. So you want to continue to talk about that, we'll take your calls at 617-779-0985. But I do want to pivot and talk football as the Patriots start up their season with a new quarterback for the first time in 20 years tomorrow. Kind of a big deal. We'll get to that next here on Gasper and Murray.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.